Hello, everybody, and welcome to another In Your Field podcast, where we're delighted to be joined by Andy Ainscoe, the Managing Director of Adventure Park Snowdonia. We're actually going to be talking about surfing, zip wires, hotels, and maybe even business. Well, Andy, thank you for joining us on an In Your Field podcast. We've also got the infamous Anna Price here, who's going to behave herself for the whole duration of this podcast. So we're here at Adventure Park Snowdonia, Andy, and to say that there's lots to talk about here is a little bit of an understatement. I think rewinding right the way back to when we first met was actually at the Royal Business Awards a few years back. So tell me about the origins of this place. I mean, I know it was actually a former brownfield site. So do you want to just talk us through what Adventure Park Snowdonia is, first of all, for people listening?
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a long time. I've been in Wales 8 years, and this project, we opened in 2015, the first time. I surfed Snowdonia at the time. So long story short, my family bought this site when the factory closed, 2007. Not to put a surf lagoon on it, in reality. Thought maybe a mixture between housing, caravan lodges, you know. There was even a prison proposed for this site at one point. So yeah, it's much better for me and much better, I think, for the village that we got an adventure park. So, you know, over year, 2007 wasn't the right time to do a big development, but it was kind of 2012 by the time I started working at it full time. And we really set off on this journey, give it 6 months, turn into 12 months, say, well, can we get planning? Can we get the funding? And what would we put on this site? An extra hydro power centre. So access to water is huge, you know, and free water. So we're obviously building a water park. And I surfed. I'd love to have surfed more. So probably a good example of our customer, especially when we opened in 2015, you know, people that want to surf, want that learning progression to improve, but don't necessarily live by the ocean. We set off on that journey. We met a company called Wave Garden in Spain. They'd never delivered one of these projects commercially. So it's prototype technology, and we like that. Welsh government like that as well. They were desperate to give planning on this site because it was a contaminated brownfield site. We were potentially then going to create jobs and tourism, more tourism. So yeah, we opened the doors in 2015 to surf Snowdonia. Big success, a lot of visitors, very good, but very seasonal as well. We're kind of new to an extent, you know, surfing obviously it's a hard proposition for people in November, December, January, February. You're keen surfers, you know, they'll surf all year round. Hardened surfers, but it's not your masses, unfortunately. It's not your kids and your families and your corporates. So we quickly realised, and we probably maybe always knew that there'd have to be phases to it. Phase two came at Adrenaline Indoors, which is our big indoor offer, basically. So it allows us to have a winter market as well as make hay when the sun shines, I suppose, in the good times. You know what I mean? Our capacity on site suddenly is massively increased to around 1,000 participants a day that can enjoy themselves doing something adventurous. And then phase three was to add more beds and make us more of a destination. And we've been able to open the Hilton, partner with Hilton, open a Hilton Garden Inn, the first one in North Wales, the first branded hotel in North Wales. And we opened that 14 weeks ago, and that was been a new set of challenges in a whirlwind. Suddenly being in hotels.
And it certainly is a destination. I mean, it's amazing to travel here for the first time. I mean, we heard about it, obviously, way back at the beginning in 2015. I think Justin came over to the award ceremony at Chateau Impeny back then. But yeah, so to actually come here and see how it's progressed and the facilities that you have here now. I mean, I've just been texting everybody this morning saying, you've got to come here. You know, my sister's family are adrenaline junkies. I'm like, you have to come here because they just have an amazing time. So do you get, you kind of, I suppose the hotel has given it, like you say, that destination feel, and you'll get people coming specifically to stay here for, you know, periods of time.
I think especially probably this year, even more so because of obviously with the COVID, and it's so hard to get abroad, isn't it? You know, we're seeing people that normally would have taken a week in Dubai or Marbella or, you know, wherever these places would have been, where some, you know, even school trips that would have gone skiing normally to the Alps, suddenly having to do that in the UK, which is a bit of a, you know, purple patch for it. It's almost perfect because suddenly they come, they experience what there is. You know, staycation is what everyone, the whole news is talking about, isn't it? It's huge. But we've seen a massive diversification, I suppose, in our customers that are coming to this site, which gives us reassurance going into the winter as well, because, you know, it's not reliant on just our surfers filling the hotel. You know, around half the hotel, we'd say, are people just coming to the area to walk a mountain, go to a castle, or go on a steam train, which, you know, it's then on us to try and upsell them something on our site.
Yeah.
But at the same time, as long as they're coming to them things, then they'll hopefully be coming midweek in November, December as well, which is what we've struggled to have enough business in the past with the adventure park alone.
Yeah, and I think having a hotel here, certainly a branded hotel, kind of gives that consistency. And it's good for everybody. I mean, we've discussed this morning kind of with you about the impact on, you know, locals and tourism in the area and everything else. So going right back to the beginning, you mentioned it was a brownfield site. So can you explain a little bit about what was here originally and what that brownfield site was like?
Yeah, it was. So I first came here 2011, and there were still some of the buildings up, lots of concrete bases, you know, and this factory had been built in 1907. So it, you know,
was it, am I right in thinking it was a smelting plant or something?
Yeah. And they could do that because cheap electricity for the smelting, because it's the hydropower centre. So yeah, open 1907 and closed 2007. So 100 years of, you know, they didn't do things quite the same as they'd opened it when they first opened it. So a lot of contamination, you know, bases that were 5 meters in, you know, in concrete. What was an opportunity as well, because we crushed a lot of the material, used it in the build. We're in the floodplain, so we've had to lift the site a lot to kind of lift our investment outside of the floodplain. But obviously working with NRW, Natural Resources Wales, to make sure we're not, you know, us lifting it is not going to flood another area. So a lot of those challenges. But when we first put like a shovel in the ground, I suppose, and moved the machines in, you know, we have obviously budgets and timescales of when this thing would open, and we were racing towards like a spring 2015 opening. And as soon as you put a shovel in the ground, you don't realise whether all them plans of what contamination's in the ground, if that completely blow our budget.
Best laid plans and all that. You always find things that you didn't expect to find. And
we did. And in that first couple months, it was almost daily, you know, looking in a hole of oil or something, you know, and taking samples and wondering, well, is this something we've budgeted for or not? You know, and contractors straight away want to tell you, I know, we didn't know about that.
Yeah, it was terrible. You know, it's going to cost you. Shaking the head,
It was a challenge. You know, once we got above ground, we started to feel a little bit better about it, and we were coming out of the winter as well and into a summer build. But I think probably changing, you know, we hadn't closed the factory to open a surf lagoon. The factory had closed and we'd come along to do something. But it comes a little bit of a perception with that, you know. You know, this village, there's only 600 people live in this village, and most of them have had family or something to do with the factory. Now, you know, about 100 jobs had gone when it closed in 2007. Now, by the time we started building in 2012, you know, quite a few years have passed, and a lot of them people have moved on, you know, and they've had to go elsewhere. So, you know, we based ourselves in the village, you know what I mean, started using local tradesmen as much as we can to try and win some hearts and minds, I suppose.
So it's a bit of a passion thing, isn't it? Because you always find with those types of communities, they're almost absolutely passionate about what was there before. They want to almost have a hand in how it turns out, but then you also get the whole objections, but then don't know the answers.
And it's
not because they mean to be like that. It's more because they're just so protective about their world, you know. Trying to mesh yourselves in with the environment, isn't it?
It's quite a sleepy village. Or it certainly was, you know, until a surf park came along, I suppose. And you know, they're obviously worried about traffic. Noise from traffic or from, you know, whether that's people, laughing, sound of waves, and don't get me wrong, we've not always got that right along the way as well. We had a big surf event competition in 2015, Red Bull sponsored, and they held a Red Bull party, the only way Red Bull can, you know what I mean? And we had some noise complaints, you know, and we've probably learned as well along the way, you know, where, you know, you've got to make sure you've got the right applications in, you know, as long as the community know about it, you know, chances are a lot of the kids and things are going to be at them parties anyway. So just bringing them all along, I suppose. And, you know, as the years went on, we started the Conwy Valley Surf Club, which basically means that around 40 kids every Saturday morning surf for I think they pay £1 a week now. It's kind of just a token effort. But, you know, they serve now. And that's not just something good to do in the community, doing the community, but they've turned into our surf instructors and our lifeguards now. Wow. So it's creating them jobs. You know, they take ownership, and that gives us obviously good kind of kudos.
I was going to say, I suppose that moves on as well. You know, as soon as you bring something new into an environment that has been, like you say, a particularly sleepy little village, there is going to be kind of a bit of a, oh my God, what's happening here? But as the younger generation grow up, they're going to know no different. You know, the fact that you've always been here and actually they've always had somewhere to go and surf or, you know, summer jobs, whatever. I think that you begin to see things kind of change. And that's the right thing, really. We have to take, you know, places that were disused and contaminated in this case. And it's a really good example of, turning something around environmentally as well as physically, I suppose.
I think one of the things that's quite interesting, really, is that your family really identified your passion and commitment for surfing and then were able to match that with what they did as a business and their business aspirations. I mean, that's an amazing opportunity for you to match something that you absolutely adore with trying to then turn that into a business. I mean, it must be an amazing feeling to stand out there and look around at what you've achieved. But I bet there were some challenges along the way with, you know, it's quite a, well, to stand there and think, this is going to be a surfing
absolutely.
It's funny because one of the first things I said to you was, you're not Welsh. No, you're from. No. You were saying you're from Wigan, right? And your family's from Wigan, so what did you say? Yet. You're the only surfer in Wigan. So it kind of took your passion. Did you know you always wanted to do it?
No, I grew up in Wigan, and like probably most lads, I played rugby league. Wanted to be a rugby league player, played to a decent level till I was kind of 20, and realised probably wasn't going to go full professional. So, you know, but I'd always had an interest in outdoor sports. I had family friends that were, and an uncle that was like big into the kayaking. So I'd always kind of done these sports, but you know, you live in Wigan, there's other waves, but you can travel 3 hours to the east coast of England or 3 hours to the Clyne Peninsula over here to get surf or river kayaking or whatever it is. And then, so I suppose I was a great example of someone that, you know, I'd not grown up at the beach with this access to waves. You know, I had this interest, and I'd done the hard yards of driving. You know, when you're 17 and you get a license, what else have you got to do at 17, 18, 19? So, you know, I'd learned to surf, I suppose, the hard way, but I'd seen how hard it was and how something like this could, you know, fast track people's progression. We thought there'd be a market for it, but, you know, surfers typically, they don't want to pay for waves either because they're free. And, you know, we knew it would have to be bigger than just surfers. It would have to be, you know, a tourist destination, an experience. So, you know, by having nice changing rooms, having good catering, having, you know, putting on, making sure it's safe and accessible, we thought we could make a business of it. But yeah, the business, the family are business kind of out and out. So, you know, this wasn't, you know, if you met our family, you know, it's all about the numbers and all about the things. So we had to obviously build a business case, both for ourselves and the investors and for the banks and the Welsh government as well. So it's always trying to marry, isn't it? Just between, you know, it can't just be a passion project. It's a business. First and foremost,
And I suppose, you know, the fact that you're building it from scratch, you kind of, it is that investment. That investment is really hard to come by for a lot of startup businesses. So in one sense, you are incredibly lucky that family can help with that. However, I bet that you've had a lot of discussions with your family. Is it your father? Because your father was first to start into business, was it? Or is it generational?
His dad before, but I'd say your mum and dad and his brothers, that kind of took it in a bit.
And I bet they give you a hard time, don't they?
They
probably have. Let's be fair, when it comes to family business, because, you know, my family have got a business, you probably had it harder than a lot of people perceive family to be easier. But I think actually it's harder. Because when you get into those environments where, you know, you need to put a business plan before them because you need to expand one way or another, they say things they can never say to other people. Yeah. Whereas when it's family, they can just be like really direct with the questioning.
It's hard.
Yeah, it's been, like you said, it's not just the board table. You're not doing that if you go around for Sunday dinner as well, don't you? You know, it's that, you know, and if you, and my dad, if you met my dad, you know, he's brilliant, his mate, but he's lived for work and he's lived for business, you know, and it was in a very different industry, but, mm-hmm. you know, lots of the fundamentals are the same. And, you know, and of course, you know, this with 40 years between us, so, you know, we clash on certain things. That might be brand or that might be, you know, because obviously the different times, but he's a great sounding board as well, you know what I mean? I'm pleased to say he's involved.
I think, and, yeah. you know, the difference and learning from his experience.
Definitely, yeah.
But also, like you say, times are very different now, yeah. so things have moved on so much.
Yeah. Definitely, and I think, you know, through the we've been in construction so much over the years as well, because as soon as we'd opened Surf Snowdonia, we were moving on to kind of phase two, which was the adrenaline, and then phase three with the hotel. Having him, I suppose, ride shotgun on the construction, which is his background in crane hire and things, has been brilliant. You know what I mean? Absolutely. It's allowed me to stay a little bit more focused on operation and commercial, I suppose.
Because I think it'd be quite tough to find, you know, builders and construction in this kind of arena, because it's quite unique in terms of actually, when you said you went out to Spain, wasn't it? Because what is it? So it's a snow plough under the water.
Yeah, in very...
Which is just, it's just mind-boggling. Yeah. We arrived this morning because we filmed the regional finals here today, arrived for coffee, and like to get started, have a bit of a discussion about the day, and then you look out the window and at eye level there's a surfer going past. So it's like, because we knew about it here, but I think actually being there and seeing it is another level, isn't it?
I think the scale of it does surprise me. You know, the wave pools before this one, people only really knew of maybe standing waves on the back of cruise ships.
Right.
Or, you know, sometimes in water parks, indoor places, they have, you know, the big kind of ball that goes up and down. Yeah, lift the water and drop it. They don't generally use them for surfing. So we were the first commercial surfing lagoon. So, yeah, this in effect, you know, we create a wave every 90 seconds.
Right.
38 of those in an hour, you know, and the forces that are involved, you're creating like a sea defense also, because you know it's got to be able to take that wear and tear, you know, and we've got to be able to do that 10 months of the year for hopefully the next 20 or 30 years, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that this thing needs to make waves for. So it's definitely been an engineering challenge. And this site as well was you know, the water level is only 1.5 meters under the surface. And we're digging into the ground as well as building up and some of the tolerances. So, yeah, it was a real engineering challenge.
We're both that intrigued with this project. This is that moment of them bringing a snowplow into the centre.
Yeah.
Must have been a moment, really. Because all of a sudden, this aspiration of doing it must have been like, my word, that's... Yeah, on its way to being a part of the assembly.
It's almost, they call it a wave foil, but it is almost amazingly unsophisticated in that we call it a snowplow because it is. It's a double-faced snowplow almost, And a lot of the technicality of how it makes the wave is the diameters of this snowplow, the angle in which it pushes the water, then also the speed and the torque in which it travels that. You know, a lot of people say to me, if you make it go faster, can we make a bigger wave? But it effectively cuts through the water rather than scooping the water and pushing it. So effectively we've got a big motor at one end and a return wheel and a wave guard and partner with Leitner, which are Leitner Pommer. They probably take you up the mountains in the Alps.
Mm-hmm.
They're probably 80% of the ski lifts around the world. So they partner with them basically for a lot of the mechanics. So that gave us reassurance really, because Waveguard are quite a small company in Spain. They developed the bathymetry of the lagoon. So effectively the lagoon base is shaped like a reef to create the waves. So that's kind of their expertise. And they partner with Leitner to create the technology of, you know, how do we keep this thing going 10 hours a day, 10 months.
How deep is it?
At 2.5 meters at the deepest point, but it's very varied.
And that's the reef effect, isn't it? So that's how you create the shape.
Different waves in different areas of the lagoon,
Yeah, that's fab. It's really interesting, actually.
One of the things I noticed when we were actually looking at it was that there's like for those that are listening, obviously you'll have to go online and actually have a look at some of the pictures. There's essentially a frame down the middle and then this thing travels down the centre. Was that I'd end up wrapped around the poles, but apparently that's not possible.
No, definitely marrying as well, you know, working with Wave Garden on, okay, what makes a great wave, but what can you also sell to the public and it be safe enough? And obviously you can never take all risk out of it, but you know, you can make an amazing wave if you make it only over a foot of water.
Right.
you know, a very good wave from it. But that's how a lot of the reefs around the world, you know, make amazing waves. But nobody's charging them to go on them reefs. Yeah. So potentially nobody's going to sue them if they hurt themselves. So, you know, you've got to have enough water underneath you when you're surfing so you don't hurt yourselves, but enough of a wave for it to be obviously fun and exciting. And the wave's always pushing you away from the central pier as well.
Right,
so that's kind of what stops you then from, ever coming into contact with those piers. Yeah,
but I've just got visions of me hooking on. Yeah. Even you would know that if anything was going to happen to someone, it would happen to me.
Yeah. And I've been to
lots of lifeguards anyway. I'll be all right then. No, I like skiing, so yeah. I'm into my skiing, but yeah. I've never tried to surf. Today is not the day to convince us.
And I've just, I think Candy's just threatened to get me on a surfboard, but I've not bought my shampoo, so I can't possibly get my hair wet today. We'll come back another time, I think, because I think for sure, my family. Yeah, well, do you know what? Chuck the kids in the cold water, just do it, I think, Bit of character, build a bit of character in them, yeah.
Well, talking of character building, one of the things that we did when we arrived was actually walk around the adrenaline part, the indoor.
Okay.
And I have to say, that was just like my idea of heaven in there. I mean, that's exactly the kind of thing that would completely entertain me. Not probably Anna Price wouldn't enjoy it quite so much. But I mean, in there was climbing walls, but it was the adult sort of soft play down a chute, launching you into the air onto this big pillow. I mean, where on earth did you get the inspiration for in there? Because it is phenomenal.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I've got a pretty good job in that I get to go and try a few things around it and, do lots of Googling as well. And yeah. I think,
I test
a couple of these things, and then a couple of them are brand new for our site. But yeah, creating, like you said, adult soft play, all those things you wanted to, whether that was a rope swing as a kid over a river or, shooting yourself down, gorge walking and things like that. So we wanted to create, the biggest thing that can help our business is more corporates. It's out of season, it's midweek. It's no good us targeting our business just that,
weekends
and holidays, and that because they're obviously at school. So we wanted things to be exciting enough and branded enough, coloured that, they were aimed towards adults. So, we visited a place in Austria called Area 47, which is a big outdoor playground, basically. They do it really well. They've got more relaxed health and safety rules than we have.
Right.
But we kind of took a few of their ideas and copied. They have a big river that runs through their site for whitewater rafting.
Wow.
So that's their big attraction, but then they've built kind of around that these auxiliary attractions. We had a few ideas from Nitro Circus. I don't know if you know that. They travel around the world doing stunts, basically stuntmen.
Right.
So, trying to take those things but make them not tame, but safer, I suppose.
Just kind of balancing like a bit of adrenaline, but knowing that nobody's going to walk out with broken limbs.
And whose idea was the caving? Because we were talking to Ewan and he said, no, just no. And I was just saying, I've just read a book about caving.
Never
you wouldn't
happened.
Get me in a cave, not a real cave. And he said that one's full on as well.
Yeah, it is full on. When you're trying it, you can forget for a minute. But you only have 3 meters away from an exit. The water's not going to rise suddenly, and you're not cold when you're 5 minutes away from having a hot coffee. But it gives you that sensation,
that experience, doesn't it? To think, who'd quite fancy caving? I don't know. I think you'd have to probably be a little bit mad, wouldn't you?
But I've tried potholing it, and it's very cold, and it's not really for me. But
full on. So we're here. Is this site developed to its full potential? Do you have other plans?
Yeah, like I say, if you met our family, phase three. We have got other aspirations, but for the moment, we want to make the hotel nice and busy. We want to really work on we've called it Adventure Concierge, and kind of, making sure we're not just selling our activities, but, mainly to fill the hotel in reality, helping sell maybe what some of the smaller players are or, smaller providers. So whether that's us selling, gin distillery, because adventure's not for everyone. Partnering with lots of other people, just to
maximising what you've got here.
Definitely.
Before you. I think that's a lesson for a lot of businesses, isn't it? It's about making sure. I mean, Anna and I have been massively guilty of this as we've gone along, because you have some amazing ideas, but actually you need to make sure that you've maxed
maxed out really what you've got, good at working to its full potential before you then go adding on top. So I suppose it's about taking stock. And I mean, you've said that this place, that the hotel that we're sat in now, it's 14 weeks, is it?
Yeah, 14 weeks, yeah. So we're still in our infancy, really, you know, and we need to, you know, if you weren't full through this summer holidays, especially this particular year, you know, we'd have probably been doing something wrong. But we need to make sure October, November, December's quite healthy. And then January, we need to do some maintenance in the lagoon. That's, you know, we'd have to just drain that down, have a month out, and probably let the staff have a bit of time as well and just relax and come back in February, probably in time for February half term and reopen. And so I think our two main objectives to have enough corporates in those shoulder seasons, almost not worrying about January. You know, January's always going to be hard, but probably do some maintenance and rest anyway. And then outside of that, really, just make sure the activities are busy, and also that, you know, we're doing everything well as well. You know, it's been a challenge this year just having enough staff sometimes, enough management as well.
I think we were talking about how the pandemic has affected everybody. You know, there's a lot of stuff in the news at the minute about supply chain and things like that. And I think Ewan was saying that everybody's struggled with that, and you've struggled with staff and everything else. So it's people getting pinged, it's people sort of not being around, people who travel away.
The pingdemic.
So you've had challenges in those areas as well, but you've also managed to keep going, haven't you?
Yeah, we've managed to, and that's been through, you know, we've all done a stint in housekeeping, we've all, you know, we're very fortunate, you know, we're able to recruit very often lots of people that want to lifeguard and do the adventure stuff. Obviously, it's a little bit hard to get 16, 17, 18-year-olds, 19-year-olds that want to housekeep necessarily in hotel rooms. So, you know, by cross-training or taking them over just for the weekends, whether that's with me or something, just to, because at the end of the day, people want to check in at 3 o'clock. You need to let them check in at 3 o'clock, so you need to turn the rooms around.
I suppose the quite unique thing for people listening, they're probably thinking, hang on a minute, it's a Hilton garden. But your housekeeping. Yeah. So just explain a little bit about that, because whilst it has got the Hilton Garden, it's
it's a franchise,
So you actually operate the hotel in terms have to manage the running of it. So as a brand new hotelier and running...
I was going to say, that's another set of skills that you've got now.
Yeah. It's, you know, if you'd asked me this 5 years ago, I never thought I'd have been hotel and enjoying doing hotel, you know, would have been so interesting, because I came from more surf and the outdoor stuff. But we, you know, when we built this site, we put 30 pods on it straight away, because we knew even just the one or two nights would have really helped, you know, evening bar, people staying and what have you. So more accommodation was always a long-term plan, and generally Hilton now, it's a good model if you can get it. They generally don't own their own hotels. They either do a franchise, purely where someone like ourselves, you know, say, all right, we've got a site, do you deem us, you know, appropriate for your brand? Yes, great, okay. And you pay them a percentage of the turnover at the end of the year. You know, with that, you get a lot of guidelines on, we recommend you to do it this way, you know, certain things like fire, life safety, service level agreements, absolutely, you know, but... And they're there to help you with systems, your access to there, you know.
So you get to learn from them, really, don't you?
Yeah, both through the build as well, you know, acoustic levels between bedrooms, slip ratings of floor tiles, all these.
You've learned so much.
Yeah,
talking about things that I've never heard of.
Yeah.
All these things that, you know, if we were looking at a hotel before the Hilton, before we had the introduction to Hilton, and, you know, in one way we fancied that because we could have completely branded it how we wanted to. We could have done some quite quirky things, whether that would have been a slide from the top floor to reception. But we were probably a little bit nervous as well about having to understand all those things from the off. And would people trust, I don't know, Adventure Park Snowdonia Hotel? Mm-hmm. Where I think we get the best of both worlds with the Garden Inn is that, you know, we can brand it enough in line with it. It works for us, but we get the good corporate side of it as well, and international travels, they recognise it, they know what they're getting.
I think that's something that we found with all the businesses that we've interacted with, I suppose, from partners, so the likes of Amazon and our major corporates that work with us on that side of things, but down to the small businesses that set up, partnerships are absolutely key to learning and moving businesses forward. So I think we were, where were we filming with Felicity and David? In the Peak District, weren't we?
Washington, yeah.
Yeah, and they were kind of saying one of the things about the awards and the group that we bring to it is that we, so you entered in 2015. We don't just say you entered in 2015. That's lovely. We've kept in touch with you guys. And I think that that's them bringing you on. And, you know, I think with the emergence of the group, it's bringing people together and sort of doing that mentoring thing as well. You could help some people in non-competing businesses somewhere down south, you know.
This is not a recruiting podcast. I'm blatantly trying to recruit Andy here for our mentoring program.
I quite fancy coming back and surfing as well, you know. It's all good. So, but I think, you know, it's really important that we, as business founders, business owners, try and support each other as well and you know, share our expertise about.
Definitely. I think we've looked at, you know, probably not done it as much as I'd like to, and hopefully, you know, now if things settle a little bit, start looking at a few other businesses, you know, and how they, you know, we obviously look at the Centre Parks, you know, and how they're doing it. We look at other Hilton Garden Inns, you know, there's another Hilton Garden Inn at Emirates Old Trafford, and they've been very good with us. You know, they're at a sporting venue, different to us, but the cricket ground, and we've looked at, you know, the place in Austria, and then other wave pools now are popping up as well around the world. You know, when we opened in 2015, we were the only one for a couple of years, but we've now got competition. But at the same time, I think it's becoming a bit more of people's, you know, in people's psyche, they understand what wave pools are, you know.
Competition's always good. I think people get very scared of competition.
It's
very healthy, and you know, it moves places on. So certainly, you know, in terms of location, it lifts up areas, and that's what you're doing here. But in terms of having competition in a sector as well, I think it's good because it raises awareness. Yeah. It creates a market that perhaps wasn't there in the first place. And I mean, you'll know from being the first, sometimes it's quite difficult to put the money in to persuade a market that actually an inland surf break is the thing to do. So you're kind of spending that money on developing a market, and then somebody else does jump on and become a competition. But actually then they're helping you, and it's creating that market, isn't it?
It's inevitable, isn't it? You know, in some ways it is, you know, and in another way as well, you know, in the village now, you know, there was only a post office when we came in, the hairdressers, and there's been a surf shop now, and there's a, you know, like a takeaway street food kind of thing, and the guy that takes gorge walking, and you know, he's obviously doing well probably on the, you know, vast amount of people that we're drawing in anyway. But you can't knock them anyway, do you know what I mean? And at times we've struggled to feed everyone on site, and you know what, you give them a ring and they.
But I think that's the thing as well, and talking about generational stuff, as more younger people from the area kind of see it as a really positive thing that you're bringing people in. Yeah. You've got gorge walking. Loads of people can think of loads of different things that they can start to deliver on the back of it. And you're talking about partnering further. I think it's just really nice to be able to work with other people. It makes things not as lonely as well, because it can be lonely starting and founding a business as well. Yeah. But I'm just blown away by the whole thing, really. I think it's wonderful.
It is a lot to take in, I suppose, when you first arrive. I mean, of all the challenges, what would you say has been the biggest thing? Is it the kind of having to learn as you go? Because, I mean, I can imagine never having been in the hotel industry to then be in front of people that are part of something like the Hilton is. But what has been the biggest challenges for you?
I think, you know, recruiting in this area at two levels, maybe, do you know what I mean? Like a lot of people in this area, if they're getting, you know, jobs, MD jobs, FC jobs, you know, financial controllers, things like that, you know, they've probably had to travel to Chester or other towns maybe to get the salary and the job, you know, and that's probably taken them outside of the area very often as well. So sometimes recruiting at that higher level manager, you know, in North Wales has been a bit of a challenge. And then we've also not got, I suppose, chimney pots as well. You know, we're not in Liverpool where there's 6 million people. So recruiting, you know, masses at certain times, you know, I touched on the housekeeping or F&B, you know, there's always going to be a little seasonality to our job, you know, where we just need to be able to put people in, train them for a week. And, you know, generally they're fine with that. They're going to university in September anyway. So access to volume of people, I suppose, is a challenge here. Other challenges, I suppose, getting, you know, getting the licenses for everything, you know, this had never been done before. So, you know, whether that's water quality,
ticking boxes,
and potentially red tape.
But health and safety is huge here, because I mean, you've got the the safety of not only the staff and everything and insurances and stuff like that, but then when you've got, you know, people getting on surfboards and launching down chutes and climbing up walls and all that kind of stuff, zip lining even.
Yeah,
I mean, I bet that's quite a big chunk of what you have to deal with.
Death by million risk assessment.
Yeah.
Risk assessment, proof of training for staff, acknowledgement of risk, which is like the waivers for the customers. You know, we'll probably hopefully have this year circa 80,000 participants go through our adventures. That's a lot of people, and and a lot of young staff responsible for them people. You know, in that moment, you know, they've got management and hierarchy and so on beyond. But you know, and you can't eliminate all of it either, because obviously it'd be no fun. You won't be able to go down a slide if you eliminated all of the risk. So it is, it's huge, and just making sure our paperwork is issued, it's up to date, it's, you know.
It's a full-time job, Andy.
It is.
I'm sure that's your vouch for that, yeah.
Well, listen, I think probably a fantastic place to finish. But, I mean, for us, thank you for inviting us here today. It's one thing seeing it as an entry to the Rural Business Awards. It's a whole other thing coming here and experiencing it. And I can quite honestly say that you be amazed if you go and look it up. But thank you, for participating today, and we hope to hear more from you soon.
And we'll all be back.
Yeah,
we'll be bringing everybody back.
Yeah. You need to serve some experience.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for the In Your Field podcast. Now, make sure you don't miss an episode by subscribing either via Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you get your podcasts from.